You're listening to a podcast of a program produced in 2013 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic conversations, readings, and performances that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic Downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To support Aloud or learn about the entire podcast collection, please visit www.lfla.org/aloud. If you have an interest in autism because you are the parent of an autistic child, have tried to communicate with someone autistic, are yourself on the autism spectrum, or are just interested in how the brain works, then tonight will be of special interest to you as we listen to Temple Grandin discuss her new book, The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. For a quarter century, as the New York Times points out, Dr. Grandin has been helping people break through the barriers separating autistic from non-autistic experience. Dr. Temple Grandin is one of the world's most accomplished adults with autism. She is a professor of animal science at Colorado State University, and she lectures widely around the country. You may have heard her TED Talk, read one of her many books, including Thinking in Pictures and Animals Make Us Human, or seen the HBO movie based on her life, which received 7 Emmy Awards. Dr. Grandin didn't talk until she was 3.5 years old, communicating her frustration instead by screaming, peeping, and humming. In 1950, she was diagnosed with autism, and her parents were told she should be institutionalized. She tells her story of, quote, groping her way from the far side of darkness in her book, Emergence, labeled Autistic, a book which stunned the world because until its publication, most professionals and parents assumed that an autism diagnosis negated the possibility of living a productive life. In her new book, she recalls her early years, her mother's farsighted response to her special daughter, the sensory world of autism, as well as the history of autism diagnosis and treatment in this country. We've come a long way, as she says, in the last 65 years. What makes a talk by Temple Grandin so special is that she's able to weave her own experiences, including, in this case, her own brain scan, to remarkable new discoveries in neuroimaging and genetic research that link brain science to behavior. Most exciting, she argues that raising and educating kids on the autism spectrum can focus on ways to foster long-overlooked strengths and to foster unique contributions. Temple Grandin, as you know, is one of our most beloved and respected voices on this subject, and we're so honored. Please join me in welcoming her back to the Los Angeles Public Library. Thank you.
Well, it's great to be here. A lot of things to talk about tonight. Let's just talk a little. We're going to be talking, first of all, about what autism is. Some people understand that, other people don't. When I was a little kid, 3 years old, I didn't have any speech. Fortunately, I got really good educational intervention. If anybody, I just talked to a dad today on the phone, and he had a three-year-old they think might have autism, but they don't know what to do about it. I said, if you have a child that doesn't talk, you got to start working with them. Lots of one-to-one teaching. You don't want to be waiting. Doing nothing is the worst thing you can do. Now, the thing is, you take a lot of so-called disorders of the brain, there's a point where it just becomes normal variation. You know, there's more creative careers in the siblings of people that are bipolar. There's more techies than relatives of people with autism. A lot of people that are in a lot of technical fields have a little touch of autism. There's a point where it's just normal variation, because in the mild forms, they can be advantages. In the more severe forms, you get big handicaps. You know, let's look at these guys. How about Albert? Yeah, little Albert had no language when he was age 3. He'd be diagnosed autistic. Well, what happened to him today? Little Stevie, a weird loner who brought snakes to school, was teased, tortured, finally went to another school, and the thing that saved him was the neighborhood computer club. This is where we got to get a lot of these kids that are kind of different involved with activities that where there's a shared interest. Autistic kids tend to get fixated on their favorite things. Let's get in and do things with other kids that have a similar interest. And I'm seeing too many smart kids getting different labels and just not going anywhere. Because the thing is, you got to stretch these kids. Mother had a really good idea of just how much to stretch me to get me to do things. You got to push them just outside the comfort zone. If you don't push them some, they don't progress. No, you can't do sudden surprises. You can't chuck them in the deep end. That doesn't work. Now, the autism, you know, this word is put on a very, very big spectrum. And at one end of the spectrum, you've got people like half of Silicon Valley, some famous artists. And boy, you've got a lot of autistic kids and the parents of people in Silicon Valley and all the tech centers, especially in the older companies where they've got kids. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got individuals that remain nonverbal that are extremely handicapped. So you've got a very broad spectrum here. You know, but the problem is, since most people are verbally based, they get locked into these labels. You know, so I'm seeing kids getting labeled ADHD, autism, dyslexia, some kind of other problem. And all everybody does is see the deficit, and they're not looking at what the kid could be good at doing. All right, one of the things that we did in the Autistic Brain book is to go through the history of the diagnosis. First of all, the diagnosis is not precise. It's a behavioral profile based on certain clusters of symptoms. Well, in 1943, Kanner wrote his famous paper describing autistics, and they used to think it was all psychological. You know, then they thought it was involved with schizophrenia. You know, then in 1980, that you had to have onset before 30 months speech delay. Yep, I would have had that. And then they added some other things as PDD-ONOS, sort of, you know, not maybe not all the autistic traits. Then in 1994, they put in Asperger's syndrome. You know, to be autistic, you didn't have to have speech delay. So that would account for a lot of the increased diagnosis. Now they want to tighten it up, take out the PDD-NOS, take out the Asperger's, change Asperger to social communication disorder. But it's still the same thing. And I have to say that when we laid out the whole diagnostic history, it's really pretty shocking. This is the first time I'd actually seen the whole thing completely laid out. Genetics is complicated. It's a complicated genetics, little tiny code changes and many little nucleotide pairs. It's not going to be simple. Not simple. You're not going to find an autism gene. That's a bunch of BS. Now, let's just talk about genetics. Some really interesting things has been learned about genetics. Only 2% or less of the DNA that you have codes for proteins. In other words, makes a person, makes a dog or a cat. What does the rest of the DNA do? Well, a big portion of that tells the coding DNA what to do. It's basically the operating system. And that was just sequenced in 2012. See, prior to that, they'd only sequenced the coding DNA. Now, the thing is, that doesn't look like your basic double helix, but that's what it looks like when it's all folded up in the sperm or the egg. But when you fold it up, coding DNA goes against non-coding DNA. And somehow it controls what the coding DNA does. And I liked this because it kind of implied that it's almost kind of a mathematical relationship. But I read all these articles that were in Science and Nature, and I go, you know what? We don't know how the operating system works. We just don't know. This is all a lot more complicated than what we used to think. And when I was in biology class back in the 60s, I asked my science teacher how random mutation and Mendelian genetics could explain why when I take two kinds of dogs, a border collie that's black and white, fairly long hair, and a Springer Spaniel that's liver and white, and I breed those two dogs. Yeah, okay, the black coat's dominant, so the puppies are black and white. But you end up with a dog that looks like what you'd expect half and half to look like. How did Mendelian genetics explain that? And they said, well, random mutation. I said, I can't buy that because, okay, you take another pair of dogs and you put them together, you still get the same kind of puppies that look half and half. Well, this is the kind of stuff that's going to be explained by what we're learning about the operating system. Now, I like to look at different traits. You know, anxiety, tendency to be social, tendency to be depressed. It's sort of like keys on a music mixing board. They are continuous traits. And when you move it enough to where it becomes an abnormality, there's no black and white dividing line. Maybe extreme genius is an abnormality. Ever thought about that? You know, I've often thought, who do you think made the first stone spear? It wasn't the social yakety-yaks around the campfire, that's for sure. Now, I am a total visual thinker. I think completely in pictures. And this has been really helpful in my livestock equipment design. Now, when I wrote one of my earlier books, Thinking in Pictures, I made the mistake of thinking everybody on the autistic spectrum thinks in pictures. Well, I got some reviews on Amazon that made it very clear that was not true. So then I started exploring asking people about how they think. And I was shocked to find out that not everybody thinks in pictures. You know, there really are different ways of thinking. So-called normal people are kind of more even. Now, when I design a piece of equipment, I could test run it in my mind. I didn't know other people couldn't do that. I used to joke around that I had a big internet connection in my head. Well, it turns out I've got this circuit, a big visual circuit. It's probably on the upper end of the spectrum, but the circuit is normal. You want to see the really crazy circuit, it's in USA Today. We couldn't get that picture in time for the book, and it showed like my language circuit turned into a huge visual association circuit. And I said to Walter Snyder at the University of Pittsburgh, I said, what's this circuit called? And he says, well, I don't know. Well, because now there's a new scanning technology that I'm going to show later that's way better than this 2006 stuff. Now, here's one of my drawings. Now, the thing is, when you're a weird geek, how do you sell yourself? You can't get a job, you know, the regular interview way. You got to show off your portfolio. Oh, good, we got a good projector that actually shows this. Because sometimes you get a projector that doesn't work very well. Now, what I tell people is, make a portfolio to show your work. And then you never know where you might show your work to just the right person, and then you get into things. And in the HBO movie, I walked up to the head of the Farm and Ranchman magazine, and I got his card. And that's exactly what I did. And people said to me, well, how'd you have the guts to do that? You know why I had the guts to do that? Because when I was 8, Mother made me put on my little Sunday school dress and greet her dinner guests. And it was, good evening, Mr. Wood, and shake hands. Good evening, Mrs. Wood. There was no calling them by their first names. And then I served them more turfs. And these are the kind of simple things you can get some of these kids to do. Because I'm seeing too many of these kids get a label, you know, especially on the higher end of the spectrum, and they aren't learning how to shop. They can't walk up in a restaurant and order food. That's just ridiculous. And they've got to learn how to do stuff like that. Now, this is a scan that was done out at the University of Utah, and that blue part, that's the ventricles. That's basically water in there. And you can see that I have an asymmetry, which kind of trashed out the math department. You know, my math department just isn't going to work. You know, I found out my cerebellum was small, and that kind of messed me up for becoming an expert skier, too. Okay, you know, a lot of people don't think innate ability matters. This is the 1968 IBM teletype terminal. Bill Gates had access to this with free lessons and free time. I had access to this exact thing, same thing in 1968. I tried to take the programming class. I couldn't do it. I could log on and Rex would say, Rex says hello, sign in. I could do that. And that's about as far as I could get. And this is something I wanted to do. Now, I agree with Malcolm Gladwell about having to practice. You've got to develop talents. I spent a lot of time learning my cattle handling stuff. And you've also got to have access to the opportunity to do it. I agree with that. But, yeah, innate ability does matter. And I think where it matters the most is where you get into some of the extreme ends of things. Now, this is probably my most important slide. So I started questioning people about how they think, and I wanted to, you know, like, had to answer this Amazon reviewer that, you know, telling me that not everybody's a visual thinker. So I started talking to people about, questioning people about how they think. And I asked them questions like, think about a church steeple. How does it come into your mind? I see specific ones, and I can tell you exactly where they're at. Other people got this vague, generalized thing. I'm going, oh, wow, trippy. Ask a speech therapist. You got a vague, generalized thing. Then I got to thinking about the math. And how, you know, they say, well, math, a lot of mathematical stuff's visual spatial, but I was terrible in math, especially algebra. And if you can't do algebra, you need to jump to geometry. Just go to geometry. So I got to thinking, well, the math kids have got to be more a pattern thinker. You know, and these kids often have trouble with reading. You know, and so I kind of said, well, there's kind of three kinds of thinking. There's the object visual thinker like me. There's the mathematical mind, thinks in patterns. And then there's the verbal guy. Loves history, you know, doesn't really care that much about art. And I get asked all the time, how do you figure out what kind of thinker your kid is? Well, let's look at him in third or fourth grade. Art kids normally like to draw, and they're good at drawing. But you got to encourage them to draw lots of different things, not just draw the same stuff over and over again. Mathematics kids will be good at math. But don't make them do boring math. Let them get the more advanced math and do it in the third grade if they want to. You know, these skills will tend to show up if the child's given a chance just to do it. Now, when I was worked on the autistic brain, I was so happy when I actually found scientific references that supported these two kinds of visual thinkers. You know, I had figured this out just on my own, because I've actually written about this for over 10 years. But then I was trying to find research that supported it. And I'd looked before for research, and I couldn't find any. Then one night at 3 o'clock in the morning when I couldn't sleep, I was reading a rather boring paper on visual perception. And I looked in the reference list, and it had this reference. This Marie Kozhekhanov, I can never pronounce it right. And I started looking up these papers. And I found papers that actually supported this. That really was true. I'm going, oh, wow, that makes me happy. Now there's two ways you can do the math. More the verbal way or more the visual spatial way. Now, I want to give you a glimpse into the mind of the pattern thinker. This is not my mind. That praying mantis is made out of a single sheet of folded paper. No cuts, no tape. What you see in the background is the folding pattern. That's not my mind. And here are some fabulous little origami stars that some autistic kids gave to me. And I'll always like to show my drawings off. And there's a beautiful drawing by Jessie Parks. Well, the same kind of drawing, but she adds psychedelic colors to it. You know, and she's more a moderate level person with autism. Now, the thing I want to emphasize is it's never too late to start. You can always keep developing. I think the older I get, I'm getting better at thinking because my thinking's bottom up. So as I put more and more data into my database, I've got more and more information to associate. Here's another gorgeous artwork that's professional level. Now, what is that mess? Like, I'll get a drink of water. That is the remains of the Fukushima nuclear power plant. Well, I get interested in these sort of things, and I was reading lots of newspapers, lots of stuff on planes. I got nothing to do, so I like went out and bought like 5 papers, took them on the plane, leave a nice mess from the cleanup on the plane. And when I found out why these burned up, I go, how could they do that? I can't design a nuclear reactor. No way. I don't understand fully how a nuclear reactor works. But the one thing I do know is that if the emergency cooling pumps don't work, you're in so much trouble it's not funny. And what they did was to put the generators that run the emergency cooling pumps, and plus the wiring and stuff, in a non-waterproof basement. I'm not kidding. So what do you think happened when the tsunami came in there and flooded all the emergency equipment? That's why they burned up. Now, in a lot of jobs, I find worked a lot of meatpacking plant stuff, it's the draftsman who lays out the plant. Yeah, you'd have someone like me, visual thinker, to lay the plant out. Someone has to lay out the roads and stuff around it. And I go, wait a minute. I think we better have submarine doors in that basement. We better have sump pumps in that basement. Well, we're going to be in so much trouble, it's not funny. But they don't see it. Now, one thing that's concerning me today, with all the emphasis on STEM now, is my kind of mind's going to get screened out. So how did I get through school and manage to get a PhD? First of all, in the 60s, I got to thank the math fads. In 66, when I took math, it was finite math. Probability, matrices, and statistics. With a ton of tutoring, I could do it. And then for my field, I had to take statistics. I was able to get through that. I had managed to avoid algebra. But you need my kind, because we're going to prevent this kind of stuff. Remember how the airbags are killing babies? Okay, they blindly followed the specification that the airbag had to hold in a man with no seatbelt. Well, there's just no way that's going to work, not kill babies. You know, we need those visual thinkers, because I can visualize every way it could break. And I used to think people were stupid when they did this. You know what? I found out it's not stupidity. They just don't say it. Well, in my early work with cattle, I'd get down in the chutes and see what cattle were balking at. And they'd be afraid of something like the flag. Okay, let's look at that picture. Anybody, how many people noticed that the animal's locked onto the sunbeam like radar? Most people didn't notice it. I noticed that kind of stuff. That's visual detail. And if you get rid of those things, shadows, reflections, puddles, they'll walk right up the chute. I get asked all the time, are they afraid of getting slaughtered? I find if you get things like the sunbeams and the reflections and things out, they'll walk up the chute. And if you want to see one of my systems, you can look up on YouTube, Beef Plant Video Tour with Temple Grandin. Yeah. Beef Plant Video Tour with Temple Grandin. An animal's world is sensory-based, not word-based. So if you're working with individuals that don't speak, they're going to be living in a sensory-based world. You've got to get away from language. Language isn't the only way to think. You know, there's some people when they get Alzheimer's, as the language parts of the brain are wrecked, art starts to come out. And when Van Gogh was painting Starry Night, I don't think he realized he was doing mathematics in it. I thought that's really, really, really interesting. My thinking's bottom up. You know, most people are top down. Form a vague policy, and then you try to put all the stuff into it. My concepts, you take specific examples and place them in categories. Now, in a lot of policy stuff, we need more bottom-up thinking. Because I think one of the problems we've got now with a lot of politicians is this, everything's an abstraction. They fight over ideology, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse. And I think that part of the problem there is you've got people that have never done practical things. One of the worst things that the schools have done has been taking the hands-on classes out of the schools. Absolutely one of the worst things. Woodworking, art, welding, sewing, cooking. You know, these teach practical skills. And the thing, they also teach problem solving, because sometimes you mess up your project, then you got to figure out how to save it. But everything's learned with specific examples. You want to teach the kid about the word down? You go down the hill. I walked down the steps. I fell down. I skydived and went down. You see, you've got to give different examples. My thinking is also associative and not linear. We need more people that are associative thinkers. Because let's look at the Boeing thing with the battery and the airplane burning up. Well, they did a risk analysis on a perfect airplane with a perfect battery. Well, if you have a damaged battery, it shorts out and it gets hot. Also, the thinking's totally not associative. Because I can tell you, they left out some big stuff that would have been in my risk analysis. 3 cargo jets have burned up completely hauling lithium-ion computer batteries. And on 2 of them, the crews were lost. Not 1 cargo jet, 3. And one of them was a Boeing product. How about the pallet load of lithium-ion batteries dropped on the tarmac? It started to burn. I'm going, yuck, man, these things don't tolerate vibration very well. That would be in my risk analysis. You know, that's associative. They couldn't think outside the airplane. All right, let's look at some associative thinking. And then I got to see some secret ride designs at Disney, and I can't tell you what those were. But I was talking to people about design, and one of the very interesting things was I looked at this PowerPoint presentation after I'd signed my life away, and 2 of the things, I instantly knew where the idea came from. It was something that had nothing to do with any kind of transport device of any kind. That's true associative thinking. And when the rides get out in the park, I'm going to put that in my presentation. It's pure associative thinking. To take something that has nothing to do with any kind of transport device of any kind, and use the idea for, you know, that's very creative. And you know who thinks up that stuff? It's the visual thinkers. Yeah, the drawings I saw that were just like kind of drawings I do, design drawings, visual concept drawings. Okay, then your next step is you take it to engineering and you figure out if you can even build what you've got on that drawing. You see, that's where you got to have the visual thinker, like me, working with the engineering mind. Let's take Steve Jobs. He was an artist. He made the user interface. The engineers have to make the inside of the phone work. One of the reasons it was so successful is he didn't make the thing so complicated that nobody could use it. All right, let's look at some associative thinking. Okay, here is Concourse B in Chicago. And I now there's different ways I can think about this. I start to get pictures. I could either go down a glass structure category. Okay, I could think a lot of pictures associating glass structures, or I could go down an airport category. And they come up like a series of slides. There is no generalized pictures. How about Biosphere in Arizona? The Crystal Palace. Oh, and then the fake Crystal Palace in Texas. I don't have a picture of that. Our greenhouse at Colorado State. Now I can start associating to our animal science building that's now getting remodeled, the big fence around it. How did I get from United Terminal to animal science? All right, or I could do an airport category, go through all the airports. You know, I like this old hangar. It's got all kinds of weird junk in it. I'd like to explore in there. Every time I go to LaGuardia, well, I try to look and see what's in the windows in there as we go by it. Now, when I asked an astrophysicist about church steeples, he saw a motion of people singing and praying. You see, that's a totally different kind of mind. Or other mathematicians will get just some more of a generalized kind of picture. Animals will make categories. If you have cattle that have only been handled by a man on a horse, they'll be tame. And then when they see that first man on foot, they freak out and hit the fences. See, think about it. Man on a horse, man on the ground are two totally different pictures. It's really important to train cattle to tolerate both. Yeah, because if you get cattle that have only been handled on a horse in a meat plant, they're bouncing off the walls. And that's not because they're scared of getting slaughtered. They're scared of the novelty, the scary novelty of a man walking around on foot. Now, I find on troubleshooting, problems with equipment, even problems with kids, people have a hard time categorizing what the problem is. Is there something wrong with the equipment or something wrong with how the people operate it? Okay, we got a nonverbal child doing something bad. Is it biology or is it behavior? Well, if he's nonverbal and his stomach hurts, he's not going to be able to tell you. So you're going to have to rule out some hidden painful medical problems first. Well, here are the people on the mild end of the autism spectrum that got to go to heaven to put the Mars rover down. Mohawk guy, Elvis guy, and then look at that old hippie, he's my age. Now, the thing that really bothers me, I can use the term gray hair. I'm one now. I'm a gray hair. And where are all the old gray hairs? They were all undiagnosed on the spectrum. They got jobs. One of the reasons they got jobs is when they were 12, they learned how to work. Something we need to be doing a lot more with kids. Paper routes are gone. How about walking dogs for people? How about buying groceries for some older neighbors? Museum tour guides, work in a farmer's market. It's a lot of stuff that these kids can do. They need to learn work skills. When I was 13, I had a sewing job that my mother set up with a seamstress that worked out of her house. When I was 15, I was cleaning horse stalls. I actually seeked that job out because I wanted to prove I could do it. And later on, I was painting signs and doing carpentry work. And one of the things that motivated me, finally, I wanted to prove to people I wasn't stupid. You know, when I was young, people told me I was mentally retarded, so I wanted to prove that I wasn't. Well, when they put me in a scanner, I was more interested in looking at pictures of things than looking at pictures of people. You know, I think a brain can be made more cognitive, or a brain can be made more social. You know, and this, a lot of this is just going to be normal variation. You got to stretch these kids. mentor these kids. I had a great science teacher. You got to get these kids out and show them interesting things. I'm seeing a lot of kids that are kind of different getting so addicted to video games they aren't doing anything else. You know, an hour a day of video games, that's fine, but not 8 hours a day of video games. They've got to learn working skills. Even when you have a job you like, it's going to have some drudgery, and you've got to learn to put up with that drudgery. Kids need to get together and do informal projects. See, one thing that's so bad about taking on out hands-on things, when I was a kid, we'd go outside and we'd build stuff. Well, you'd get four kids together and you had to figure out how to do it. My ability in art was always encouraged. We got to build on the area of strength. I've heard some really sad stories where a kid had trouble with math, so they were going to take him out of band class and make him do extra classes in math. That's totally terrible. You know, if you have a kid that loves music, band's the only thing that keeps them wanting to go to school. You don't take band away. That's the worst thing you can do. And if you have a kid that's good at math, just let them proceed. And, you know, let's take college math, the third grade classroom, fine. I'm not suggesting putting him in college because he needs to be socially in third grade classroom. But if he wants to take college classes online on a laptop in the third grade classroom, fine. Don't make kids do baby math. That is one of the best ways to make a behavior problem. And there's fabulous online resources now. Udacity, free programming classes, Coursera. There's all kinds of great stuff. Well, there's one of my cattle designs in SketchUp, a free drawing program. Now, maybe a lot of the people here know about these kind of things, but I'm finding when I get out and, you know, away from the big cities, they don't know about this stuff. You know, these things are free. You know, now around here, you can have cool things like maker community groups. Then I could print this out on a 3D printer and the little gates would actually work. Talk about really cool. You know, things like Hackerspace and stuff like that. And there's great online science projects. Well, when I was in high school and I wasn't studying, boy, I was sort of fixing up our ski-tow house. And I went away to a special boarding school because I got kicked out of high school for throwing a book because a girl called me a retard. And for the first 2 years I was there, I did zero studying. But boy, did I learn work skills. I took care of the horse barn. I was fixing up the ski tow house, shingling the barn. And I'm seeing too many, these kids now today, they get a label, and I've seen them get through college, and they haven't learned one work skill. And when I was in college, my mother and the teachers set up some internships for me. See, this is where you got to just set these things up just in the community. I did an internship in a research lab where I had to rent my own house with another person. Okay, talk about a little stretching there. And then my science teacher got me really motivated. And he really was a NASA space scientist. And when I went to college, I still visited him on weekends. I'm concerned, especially now, I need to change the slide. The pattern thinker is going to get really well taken care of in the STEM classes, but the poor old thinker like me that can't do algebra, what are they going to do with me? And then I heard in one state they wanted to, if you want to take car mechanics, you're going to have to take calculus. Well, that's totally ridiculous. I'll tell you what, there's a shortage of jobs right now. Welders, mechanics, diesel, machinists. There's a lot of tech jobs where they're bringing people in from China and India. Well, why don't we find out what kind of people they want for those visas and train all the Asperger kids how to do this stuff. And there's getting to be some good things. There's a company called System Specialists that's debugging software. I just heard today that SAP, a huge big tech company, hire guys with Asperger's to debug computer programs. And they'd be really, really super good at that. Now, working with somebody that's socially awkward, you can't be vague. You know, you gotta just tell them. When they make social mistakes, you tell them. Let me tell you what I did on my first building project and how Harley, a wise old engineer, dealt with it. Well, there's a welder there named Whitey. And his welding didn't look that pretty. And I said it looked like pigeon doo-doo. That was not the thing to say. So Harley pulls me into his office, and he doesn't scream at me. He just tells me very quietly, we have to nip these little cancers before they metastasize. You are going up to the cafeteria right now and apologizing to Whitey. And then he explained how his welds weren't very pretty, but they were strong. And I didn't go up there and tell Whitey I thought his welding looked wonderful, but I apologized for the rude language. You see, that was a really good example of a boss handling somebody on the spectrum right. And then there was a boss in the movie that slammed down the deodorant. That actually happened. I thank that boss now for that. You know, sometimes you just got to be blunt. You got to just tell them. Hands-on classes out of the schools, bad. We've already discussed that. These are the things that saved me. Also, things like woodworking, horses. When I was doing these activities, there was no teasing. I was bullied horribly. Well, now, oh man, on Facebook, they can come after you, I'll text you, leave messages on your phone, call you up when I would be out riding. They'd be calling me up on my phone. It'd be horrible. I can tell you how the 50s moms would have dealt with that. If little Tommy was writing something nasty on little Timmy's Facebook page or whatever, little Tommy's Facebook page would be shut down because the moms would have gotten together and they would have just stopped that. Now, one of the things that helped in elementary school to not be bullied was the teacher explained to the other children that I had a handicap, but it wasn't visible like a wheelchair or crutches, and they had to work on helping me and not torturing me, and that actually worked. Well, we need more people in this country doing real things. We got to get back to doing a little more real stuff. I'm seeing too many quirky kids kind of going nowhere. You know, we're not stretching these kids enough. You know, they get a label, and I'm seeing too many of these kids ending up on disability. They shouldn't be. Kids a lot less severe than me. No, they need to be working. And it's never too late to drag them out of the house. I'm seeing some that are turning into video game recluses. Somebody wrote something on the internet kind of nasty. They said, you know, Temple's really showing her age. And I'm going, if they were getting employment, gainful employment playing video games, fine. But I don't think Social Security should be paying for playing video games. Just don't. And a lot of these guys are perfectly capable of working. Okay, when you're geek, when you're weird, you sell your work and not yourself. Now, the bosses have got to give you really specific instructions on what's expected at work. You know, deadlines, things like that. When I worked for a magazine, I knew the articles would do the 15th of the month, had to do a certain amount of column inches, had to cover a whole wide variety of things. And you cannot be vague. Okay, let's say I want to teach a 12-year-old how to be a museum tour guide. You've got to just demonstrate things like the correct distance, how to greet visitors, and you need to coach them like being in a play. Tell them to watch Susie, how she does it. Museum tour guide's a great job for 12-year-olds. A lot of museums will take them as young as 12. You know, and this gets back to, you know, teaching the job skills. Now, one of the big things that can really mess up a lot of people, they get a lot of different labels, and don't get locked into these labels, is the sensory processing problems. Sound sensitivity, touch sensitivity, problems with fluorescent lights, flickering, and they're very variable. One autistic kid's got problems with flickering lights, another one doesn't. Boy, there's one place where I think we need to be doing a lot of research. It's on the sensory problems. And I have a really great chapter in the autistic brain on sensory issues. Well, loud sounds. The school bell went off, hurt my ears. There's some individuals, hearing can fade in and out. And difficulty hearing when there's a lot of loud noise. And I had trouble hearing hard consonants. My speech teacher would slow down. She'd hold up a cup and she'd go, cup, and then she'd go, cup-a, and then she'd go, cup, and then cup-a, and she'd alternate back and forth between saying it the regular way and slowly so I could hear it. All right, let's look at some of the really cool 2012 brain scans done on high-definition diffusion attention imaging. And this type of scanning can map the cable fiber bundles that connect up the different departments of the brain. This circuit right here is speak what you hear. And you can see I've got a little tiny shrimp. Well, definitely not an auditory learner, that's for sure. Now that is a normal speak what you see circuit. It goes from about here in the brain up to about here. And it stops right about here in the normal person. That is mine. You can see that's quite different. Now, what ended up happening is when you get on the, you know, each end of this and you add up how many fibers I got, I have less bandwidth for speak what I see. But where are all these other bushes going? And if you look at USA Today, you can type in Temple Grandin in USA Today. They got the best scan because it shows the bushes. Okay, let's see if we can get the arrow here. These bushes. Okay, see that's cut off right there? But in the one in USA Today, it comes out here, these bushes go all over the whole brain. But since this is an extension of the language circuit, I've basically got like a, you know, I can put keywords in search engine for visual images. Now, when I asked Walter what this circuit was, he said, I don't know. Now, the thing is, this technology was developed by the Defense Department for head injuries in veterans. Now, the Defense Department's going to put these scanners around in different hospitals. But the problem is, it's going to require a lot of research to learn how to use this. You know, at what point do you have enough bushes on there to say it's abnormal? Don't know. Don't have any idea. But this, boy, I can tell you, the football players, it's hideous. You don't need a medical degree to look at this and go, ooh, it looks like dried spaghetti, and we just went, that's what it looks like. Another problem when brains have problems is attention shifting slowness. It takes longer to shift back and forth between two different things. If you have a kid that can't read, ask them if they ever see the print jiggle on the page. The kids that hate fluorescent lights, see the print jiggle on the page, often are not doing very well in school. Let me tell you some simple things that can help that. Printing the homework on different colored paper, especially pastel papers. Trying on pale colored lenses. You get down to San Francisco on, you know, Haight-Ashbury area, there'll be lots of good colored glasses there. That can sometimes help with this problem. Okay, there's my head. Now what that is the connectome. That is all the white matter circuits that connect up the different brain circuits. Now you got a space there. I hope that space has got some gray matter in it. This is the white matter, which is the inter-office communication. And then all the specialized functions are out on the perimeter. You know, Apple's like building this round office building. Well, that's like the gray matter. Okay, now we'll take the courtyard out and just fill up the whole center part with fiber optics, going from all the different specialized departments. That would be the white matter. And now what this new technology can do is you can dissect out the cable bundles. Okay, let's say my fingers are little tiny fibers there. Okay, that's a bridge. They don't connect. That's an intersection. This technology can tell the difference. So you can actually dissect out specific cable bundles. Now, it's sort of like we just got the Hubble Space Telescope for the brain, and we don't have any grant money to learn how to use it yet. And this would enable much more precise diagnosis than behavioral profiling would. There's my connectome without the rest of the head. Okay, I also found out that my fear center is bigger than normal. Well, that's why all through my 20s I had terrible panic attacks. That's been controlled for 35 years with antidepressants. I've found this, us visual thinkers, we tend to be the panic monsters. I have a lot of friends in design. A little bit of Prozac's keeping them off the drugs and alcohol. You know, but only just a little small dose, because you take too much, you're going to get agitation and insomnia. There's a dose window. If you go over that dose window, you have a real mess. Doctors are raising doses when they ought to be cutting it. And I talk about that in my book, Thinking in Pictures. But I want to emphasize, not everybody on the spectrum has this problem. The only finding that sort of comes up universally in autism, when you have the people that are fully verbal, is the social circuits aren't hooked up. Circuits of face recognition, emotional stuff on the face, that goes across the spectrum, but this other stuff doesn't. You know, like one kid's a visual thinker. His stuff's going to be different than somebody that's a math thinker. He's not going to have water in the left parietal area, that's for sure. Well, here are some accommodations we might need for people that are kind of different. Get rid of fluorescent lights. Quiet place to work. They may need breaks to calm down, and no sudden changes in work routine. You know, may have to change routine, but don't just say, oh, tomorrow we're going to just move out of the office. I mean, don't spring it on them like that. And no scratchy clothes. And I have found that some cotton itches and other doesn't, and I don't really know why. You know, it's okay if you're a geek to cry. Because I had to learn how to get rid of anger, and when people teased me, I went to crying. I was still miserable. And when they canceled the shuttle, all the NASA space scientists were crying, and they were walking off the camera for 60 minutes. You know, it's hard to control emotion. It's okay for techies to cry. That's fine. People that throw wrenches would have never gotten a job at NASA. They would have been fired years ago. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. You know, you get these kids that are kind of different. You got to sort of get together and help them. And I was with the president of the library for dinner. They went to a beautiful dinner at the restaurant next door. He was telling me about these girls that live in a box. And that he came out in the middle of the night, and they were pressed up against the window of the library with a computer. And what they were doing was picking up on the Wi-Fi signal on a borrowed computer and getting really good grades in school. Well, maybe the library needs to boost that Wi-Fi signal. But that's, you know, and I'm finding as I travel around and talk to a lot of people in low-income areas, libraries are the only way they can have books. They just can't afford. You know, like I tell them I have a book, they'll say, well, I've got to wait until that book comes to the library. They can't afford a $28 book. Even in paperback, it's too expensive. And I'm so happy that the people here in L.A. have been supporting the library. And you know, for a lot of kids, they got to do their homework in a library. It's the only place they can get on a computer, get on the internet. Well, I got to give my client McDonald's a little bit of credit, because out in the rural areas, you know, kids have been doing their homework at McDonald's because it's got a good Wi-Fi signal. Well, there's a real problem with rural internet access. It is a mess. The phones are somewhat better, but the networks are weak. You know, when you have a family member with severe autism that's nonverbal, you can have a really stressful situation for the family because you can't do regular activities like football games and restaurants and things like that. And my mother's been working on setting up little conference calls. We're getting heads of organizations to just talk together, maybe three or four people on a call, let their hair down, cut through the bureaucracy, and not be, you know, reinventing the wheel. People need to get out of their silos. We need more associative thinking. It's what we need. People tend to just stay in their own hole. Well, I'm really happy to say it. CSU is going to be building a new writing center, and they're looking for donations. We'll leave that up there a little while. And I think what we'll do right now is to just get some questions. Because I can tell you, public education right now is totally terrible here. Everybody's budgets are just getting cut everywhere. You know, we have a retired faculty member, and he said to me, you know, I went to the University of California, and I could work my way from school. And he said to me last year, school's so expensive now, I wouldn't have been able to go to the University of California today. Thought that was really sad. Oh, yeah, I got the mics right there.
Thank you so much.
The cup good and far away from the computer there. Well, we're certainly going to have some questions. Okay.
Hi, Temple. Thank you so much. It's really interesting listening to you. And I have to read my... Okay, so one of your slides, you said anxiety was controlled by drugs. So I'm just wondering, what does that anxiety look like? And, you know, what did the drugs actually do? Because, you know, we have a daughter that's taking...
How old is she?
14. And I'm wondering what she's feeling from those
drugs.
I'll
tell you what I was feeling.
What does it feel like?
Well... Imagine you got stage fright, you know, you're really scared to do public speaking. And when I gave my first talk, I walked out because I was so scared. And when I consulted with Dustin Hoffman from Rain Man, I said, imagine what you felt like when you went for your first big, super important audition, how nervous you were. Now imagine if you had those audition nerves every single day, or you had final exam nerves every single day. For no reason. That's what it felt like. Or let's say we lock up this room and I take a few cobras and I just throw them out here. Well, now I'm going to spend the night in here with a few cobras. And can you imagine what you would feel like? Nervous system on high alert. That's the way I felt all the time. In other words, My nervous system was in alert for dangerous predators all the time.
But what I was trying to find out is when you do take the drug, does it
Oh, the drug
it,
stopped it.
It stops it.
Oh, it stopped it.
And also, if my daughter's, like, you know, stimming out on fast things and stuff, is that also part
well,
of anxiety?
She, okay,
or
well, some of the, sometimes they stim out and stuff because they calm down, but then you get addicted to it. And I have a chapter in my book, Thinking in Pictures, called A Believer in Biochemistry. And I'd recommend you read that. Is your daughter fully verbal?
Yeah.
She's fully verbal. And you see, when I was 14, I could have become a recluse in my room just to get away from stimulation because I was so nervous, but you know they wouldn't allow that. As I went through my 20s, my anxiety worsened. Now, there's other people on the spectrum where that doesn't happen. See, this is where it's very, very variable. But somebody's really, is she a visual thinker by any chance? What does she like to do? Well, how much stimming is she doing? Well, if she's doing it for 15 minutes a day, I'm not going to worry about it. If she's doing it for 5 hours a day, I'm not going to allow that. You know, you'd have to look at the amount of time she's doing stimming. I was allowed to have an hour after lunch to, like, spin things. And then other times, I had to be tuned in. Well, I had to sit at the table. I wasn't allowed to have manners. I wasn't allowed to do it at the dinner table. I just wasn't allowed to do it. And then there were some times, other times, where I was allowed to do it. How's she doing in school? She's just doing getting good grades? What? Also, I think because she's 14 years old and fully verbal, she needs to get a job. This is another thing. When I was 14 was when I first started cleaning horse stalls. You know, some kind of job outside the family that she's got to do, like maybe walk a couple of dogs for the neighbors. And I found that when I was out doing those things, I was a lot less nervous.
We have another question right over here.
Okay.
Another question right over here.
Okay. I can't tell
right
where the
here.
Sound's coming
right
from. Okay.
My question is on the iPad. Can you please comment on integrating the iPad into more of a routine, functional life? As background, I have an 8.5-year-old son, and in November, prior to November, we didn't have the iPad into his life, and he was having a hard time in school. And then we got him into augmentative communication.
Okay, is he fully verbal or not verbal or?
He's only partially verbal.
Partially verbal. That's where the iPad can really be helpful.
Yeah, he has probably about a 20 or so stock
okay.
phrases, and he struggles with speech. So it's,
can he learn to type on the iPad?
Yeah.
Because let me tell you why the iPad works better than this laptop, and it has to do with attention shifting. Okay, if I look at a letter on this keyboard and I press a letter on this keyboard, I got to look at the keyboard. When I press it here, I got to look up to see it appear on the screen here. You can't make the attention shift. On the iPad, when you press on the virtual keyboard, the letter appears right next to the keyboard. So you don't have to attention shift. That's why it works better than a laptop or a regular computer. It's also a really cool thing that normal people have. So it's not some special device that normal people don't have. It's a regular thing. But I would try getting him to just type words on the iPad. Because there are some individuals that are nonverbal or partially verbal that can learn to type. And you might want to read a book like Tito's How Can I Talk If My Lips Don't Move? He's a young adult who's totally nonverbal, looks completely low functioning, and he types independently. He describes a sensory jumbled world.
Okay, next question right over here.
Okay.
Thank you for a wonderful presentation. We had the pleasure of seeing the movie about you. It was just very informative. I have a question. I have written a fairy tale in which a child with autism saves the world from chaos at the age of 10.
What? He does what at the age of 10?
He saves the world from chaos.
He saves the world from chaos at the age of 10. How does he do that?
Well, you have to read the story.
Okay, well, I don't know about
that. I would be glad to send you the story if you're interested.
Okay, I can't answer that.
No. My question is this. It is entitled Go Aspie Go. I was told that the word Aspie is used between Asperger kids as a friendship word.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be incorrect. Is this the right thing to do?
Well, the thing you see, that, you know, that's Aspie is just Asperger shortened.
Right.
You know, and then on DSM, they're going to take Asperger out, which has a lot of people really upset. See, the problem is these behavioral profiles are not precise. You know, you talk to psychiatrists and they'll say they're clusters of symptoms that, you know, kind of go together. But the problem is schools and the public treat these behavioral profiles as if they're precise. I mean, basically, whether you call it social communication disorder, Asperger, Aspie, or socially awkward, it's all the same thing. Person with normal speech, more or less normal speech development, that's socially awkward. And I had to learn all social skills had to be taught. And one thing that helped a lot of, you know, why the gray hairs, a lot of them have got jobs is because in the 50s they just pounded in the social skills. Now, where getting a diagnosis helps for an older individual is on their marriages, their relationships. That's where it can give tremendous insight. But what I'm seeing now, I'm seeing kids much milder than me, where they're not getting stretched enough. They're graduating from college, they've never, ever done a single job. Then when they get out in the workplace, well, I don't want to do some grunt work that the boss wants. And then somebody says that's executive function. I go, no, you just didn't want to make the stupid bird videos. But you managed to get through a prestigious design school just fine. Yeah, you have to make the stupid bird videos.
We have another question.
And you better make them really good.
Hi, is this making noise? Yeah. I'm here with my daughter, who is autistic, and she has asked me to ask you a question because she struggles so much with traveling, flying, because of two things. One is the noise of the...
Well, the noise of the airplane,
of the
noise, okay,
of
all
the,
right.
No, of the check-in.
How about noise-canceling headsets? Have you tried that?
Yeah, we do that.
All right.
The security line...
What's wrong with the security line?
Metal bars that do a lot of clanking when the luggage comes on to the metal bars before they go into the conveyor belt.
You know what maybe you ought to do? You ought to get a sound recording of some of this stuff and play it softly till you get desensitized to that. You know, and that's something you only have to tolerate for a short period of time. I mean, I could tolerate a scratchy pair of pants for a short period of time. Like, if I had to wear them just to get through airport security, I could tolerate them, but I couldn't. But if I had to sit on a five-hour flight, that'd be another matter. I think we got to figure out ways, how can we deal with this to enable? Wheelchair ramps, enable. You know, big bathroom stalls, those enable. But we got to figure out how can we enable you to fly. The other thing that I don't like is I'm seeing too many smart kids come out to me, and all they want to do is talk to me about their autism. I'd rather talk to them about their science project, or they love dogs, or they're in a cat club or something. You know, some other thing, because when I was a young person, it was all about cattle chutes and optical illusion rooms and kites and horses and things like that. And let's figure out how to, okay, so flying's a problem. How about the train?
Train's not a problem.
Well, okay, well, that's noisy too. All right. Well, what about noisy restaurants?
Noisy restaurants I don't go to.
I think, you see, sometimes you can desensitize some of this. I'd get a lot of these noises you hate and get them on a real high-fidelity recording device. Has to, not an MP3 file. It's got to be a high-fidelity, full-spectrum recording. And then you play it really soft, and you just play that, but you're controlling it. Then you play it louder, and you get to where you can tolerate some of this stuff. Because I think that you can build up your tolerance. Another thing that helped me is when I went on the antidepressants. That helped to damp some of this down. Because I think you can build up some tolerance. You're getting enough exercise. That's another thing that helps. Maybe some omega 3 supplements. Are you taking fish oil supplements? And what about exercise?
Not enough.
Do you own an exercise machine?
I'm fine with the exercise I get. She's not.
How much exercise are you getting?
Not
Tell me.
I walk.
No, you have to. You've got to do something that works you harder than that. I do 100 sit-ups every night on the bed, every single night, and if I didn't do them, I wouldn't sleep. Or you get, do you own exercise equipment?
She has a gym in her building.
Well, you get your butt down in that gym. And
okay, next question.
Every day.
Next question, right
and
over
you know
here.
What? It's going to take about 2 weeks for it to start to work. It takes 2 weeks for the exercise to start to have the calming effect. And you want evidence-based medicine. There's all kinds of evidence-based medicine on vigorous exercise being good for the brain. So you get down there and pick out a machine down there you like. And start using it.
Next question.
And you know what? I don't like doing the sit-ups. And the only reason why I do the sit-ups is because I can do it in any hotel anywhere.
Next question, right over here.
Okay.
I have a son that's 4 years old today. He has a disorder of the corpus callosum. And so it's
a disorder of what?
The corpus callosum, the center part of your brain.
Yeah, it makes the two halves go together.
Right. His didn't connect. But it crosses the autism spectrum in about 4 different areas. He's nonverbal right now, and I'm struggling with educators over sign language because he does communicate. He understands completely, but his communication to us is much better if we try and use sign language.
Or you try Prologo to Go on the iPad, too.
He is starting to do that. He's starting to get the concept, and he's actually blossoming with that.
And then I would use the Prologo to Go on the iPad. A lot of people really like that.
Okay, because the PEC system doesn't work.
Then don't
him.
Use it. This
right.
is where you try a lot of different things. People get way too hung up on their brand teaching. Now, you know, he's 4 years old. You got to put the hours into him. But you want to do things where you start to see progress. You don't want to be pounding on a brick wall.
But
I'm
fighting the school district on that.
Well, but if the Prologo to Go works, then start with that.
Okay.
Do things that work. You know, I always say to parents, we've got to, find stuff that works. Also, we need to, hopefully you and the school can work together rather than fight.
Right. No, I understand.
Because to really have an effective educational system requires parents and teachers working together. Then I get asked about public versus private. I find that doesn't matter. It all gets down to the particular school and the particular situation.
Okay. I had a second question, and that was you mentioned my son doesn't recognize facial expressions. He's
That's
happy
typical.
All the time.
That is typical.
How do I communicate no to him other than the facial?
You say no.
Well, I understand that. But we do timeouts, but it's not working. I just was curious if you have any insight
what is the problem? You see, right now we're too abstract.
Well,
what does he not do?
Sticking his finger in an electrical socket is not okay.
That's not okay.
Right.
I am not a fan of, spanking kids. But,
no.
That's so dangerous that I've got to make sure it doesn't happen again. And then, of course, you can put covers on them, too.
Okay.
But there's certain things you just don't do. Yeah, that's just too dangerous.
Another question down here.
Hi. My son is, he's going to be 5 next month, and we've had him in therapy that has more of a floor time DIR model, and
working?
It is.
If you're getting progress, fine. Because so much depends upon the particular teacher. And what I've observed, I've watched ABA morph into floor time. I've seen floor time morph into pivotal response or something. Good teachers tend to just morph the stuff together. And what's important is you're getting progress with a good teacher. And if your kid's really young, you're getting enough hours.
Well,
how old is he?
He's going to be 5 next month, and we are actually kind of going to add an ABA therapist, and I didn't know if that was a good thing to do.
It could be a good thing.
Different types, but what is the because I know they say that ABA is the gold standard for therapy.
You don't get hung up on that stuff. What people call ABA. It's a huge variation in what people call ABA. My speech teacher, Miss Reynolds' basement in her house speech school, did ABA. And so much of it depends upon that particular teacher. And I would try her. And if you get progress with her, great. Now, the one thing you got to be careful with some of these kids is the sensory stuff. Some teachers get too aggressive. And then what happens is the kid goes into sensory shutdown and you get nowhere. You know, this is where a teacher, and that's going to vary, you know, and some teachers have a better instinct about that than others. Try different things, and, sort of, and you know, every expert will agree on young children, you got to put the hours into them with an effective teacher. And this teacher might be really good. You know, they might have another ABA teacher, she might be bad, you know, because so much of it depends upon what the teacher does.
We have another question right over here on your right.
Okay.
Right over here.
Over here. Yeah. This presentation has just been really amazing, just wonderful. First a request and then a question. Would you mind putting up the slide that listed the various websites where people could go and...
get computer the courses?
Yeah, that was something I'd love to write down. Okay, and then the question
that's
is...
That's it right there.
Perfect,
okay.
Thank you. The question is, when you were talking about when someone has a reading deficiency, when the words move on the page.
Yep.
Does one of your books chronicle how to work with that, or could you amplify on how to?
Well, let me tell you how the easiest way to work with that. It's pretty simple, actually. You can get Erlen colored lenses, and if that's beyond your price range, then go in a sunglass store and try out light pinks, light purples, light lavenders. Try on all the different pale ones. And do this under fluorescent lights until you find one where the print doesn't jiggle. Then the other thing to do is to get different pastel papers, light blue, light gray, light yellow, light tan, all the pale colors. Print the same page of the same book, every one of the different pastel papers. Also experiment with the colored backgrounds on the computer. Experiment with fonts. Some people love the old white Kindle, because that seems to work really well for some people, and you can enlarge the font. I've had students that would have flunked out of school if they hadn't had colored paper and colored glasses. Now, what tends to happen is the glasses color is usually different than the color paper, and the person has to pick out the correct color for them. And it's different for every person. Now, exactly why this works for some people, it's not known why it works. In the back of the brain, you have circuits for shape, color, motion, and texture. And those circuits have to work together to assemble an image. And there's something wrong with that. You get a head injury in the back of the head, you can get the same thing. You see, in a developmental disorder, it didn't grow right. In a head injury, you break stuff.
We have one more question down here.
All right.
Thank you. I have a question about diet. Do you find anything in your diet?
Some individuals find that taking the dairy out, taking the wheat out, some kids respond well to the diet. I'd say it's about 10% of them.
Gluten can
That's
be a
right.
factor?
Okay. That helps some individuals. Let's one more quickie.
Last question right here.
Okay.
Hi. Sorry, I'm not used to that. I have something I want to give you. It's remember when you said we needed more internet access for the students?
Yeah, okay.
I have a really simple fix for that. I know.
How would you fix that?
Wi-Fi weakness fix. Build a GPS satellite system that provides Wi-Fi anywhere on Earth.
Well, why don't you grow up and build that?
Yeah, I'm thinking
and,
I will. I'm wanting to work
for
Microsoft,
have you
but
figuring out how to do that than talking about autism or something like that.
Yeah.
You see, autism is an important part of who I am. And I wouldn't want to change how I think and get cured, but being a college professor comes first. So okay. Go out and make that GPS Wi-Fi system.
Yeah, and I also put here more satellites may be required. Thank you.
You know, why don't you really want to do that, why don't you take some of these online programming classes here at Udacity? Do you like math or?
Me?
Yeah. Well, have you taken any computer engineering classes?
I have a game called Roblox. It's completely free, and it uses the Lua scripting language.
All right, but I want you to start. Why don't you learn some grown-up stuff on Udacity?
Yeah, I've also went to Khan Academy before.
Good. But, I mean, and you see, the thing about Udacity, right now that's free, and they're trying to figure out how to pay for it. One of the ways they may pay for it, the students take this class, and they're really good. The headhunters will come after you and hire you. And so The first classes they put up was an artificial intelligence class, but there's a fabulous high-level computer science classes on these websites, and you look old enough to where you need you can start doing the grown-up stuff.
Well, I'm
10. You're 10? You're old enough to do that?
Yeah.
If you were living in Silicon Valley, you'd be doing your parents' job already.
Aloud is made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, Errant Fox, City National Bank, KPMG, Donna and Martin J. Wolfe, and the Bujaki Foundation. Additional support provided by the Los Angeles Public Library, the Council of the Library Foundation, the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and individual Library Foundation members. Media support provided by KCRW 89.9 FM, KUSC 91.5 FM, and LA Weekly. Aloud theme composed by Larry Karish.